12:11 on the Wintrust Business Lunch, 312-981-7200. You've got a question for the money lady, Terry Savage. Call or text right now. What are you looking at, Terry Savage?
Something Jim Stack just sent me. I mean, we're talking about the market at new highs. No one appointed me as the guardian of old people's 401ks and IRAs, but
I believe you've lately been saying this would be a good time to take some money off the table.
I have.
And now the market's at new highs again. Thanks a lot.
Well, wait till you hear some of this research.
What's that?
So according to, I'm just going to give these people the credit, Alight Investment Research Data Analytics. Despite new contributions to stocks decreasing this month, the average asset allocation to 401k plans still increased to 71.9%. In other words, 401k assets, about 72% in stocks, and now, quote, a level unseen since January 2001.
So 72% of the money in 401ks is in equities.
In equities. You know, people...
That's a very high mix.
Yeah, but that's because the stock market is, you know, at new highs, and people don't rebound. And I'm telling you, if you're 35, 46, 51, 55, that's okay. You'll ride out whatever comes and keep buying stocks at bargain prices. But if this is your, you know, 3 years before retirement, or you've rolled it over into an IRA, or you've left it there but haven't rolled over, you might be just a little too heavily weighted. Why? Because you made so much money. And I don't call market turns, but Jim Stack sent me another email saying, I'm going to send you pretty soon a new report showing that the level of S&P 500 stocks making new... Let me get the details when we come back. I'll give you the specifics.
52-week lows, though?
He's talking about the fact that there's no breadth in the S&P 500, which is now over 5,600. So I don't want you all to have to be experts in the stock market. I want you all to sleep well at night. And even your most aggressive investment advisors would tell you that maybe you should take a look and see what your exposure is. And maybe you want to adjust it.
Well, about your ability to sleep at night, I wonder what would cause people to lose more sleep. That is, if you took money off the table and missed the next bump up, that might bother you. But what would bother you more?
You have nailed it, as usual. This is the question you have to ask yourself. I've solved this problem years ago because I've missed tops. You know, I've always had some chicken money. My goodness, if the chicken money I'd had were in the market, I don't even want to think about it. But it's not, and it hasn't been. Because I made self-discipline is the essence of all decision-making. And I made a decision at some point that a certain proportion would be in chicken money. And fortunately, I'm being nicely rewarded at 5.3% in six-month T-bills right now. So the question is, really, you nailed it. How bad would you feel if the market went down 30 or 40, maybe even 50%, that's bear markets territory. I mean, bear markets anything more than 20, but we've seen a bunch of them that have been over 40. How terrible would you feel versus how dumb do you feel that you've got money earning 5.4% and you missed out on the last 2,000, 3,000, 4,000 Dow points?
If you sold now some of your assets and parked them, do you think that the market is going to go below where we are today at some point? Even though it may go up, do you think it's going to go below where we are right now?
I would say it's a pretty good bet that sometime in your lifetime, the market will dip below
where
the levels we are today. It's at 5,600 on the S&P
so the money
and at 38.5 on the Dow. 39.5 on the
so
Dow.
The money you capture now, then
I know, but you can never know when to get back.
I know that, but I hate that. I knew you were going to say don't be a market timer, and I think you can be, because I'm not asking you to know when. All I'm asking you to do is say, will it ever get then above that point, and you get back in.
Ladies and gentlemen, we now have a market forecast from your famed market forecaster, John Williams, who will tell you not only that you might want to have some money on the side, but will be here every Wednesday with me. And one Wednesday he will say when it's going down, and we'll be here at some point when it's going down.
Sure.
I'm not going to say I told you so. It at some point it will be going down. That's a pretty fair bet. And I really am going to press you every Wednesday when it's going down to say, is it John? Are you really going to get back in? Are you going to jump in? at what? At Dow 3650?
But I'm not going to try and pick the bottom. All I need to know is that my reference point is going to be where it was on today, July 10th.
Okay, so here's the thing. We all tell ourselves that we'll be calm and cool during moments like that.
Yeah.
But the market extremes are made by people losing their calm and cool. That's what tumbles bear markets. People go, oh my God, I can't lose it. I mean, oh my goodness, what if, oh, I have to sell. And so what I'm trying to avoid is that moment of panic and the moment of dread leading up to the panic and the moment of greed going, should I buy back now?
Yeah.
That's not a great way to live your life. Do other things with your life. Have your investments appropriately diversified with enough of a cushion on the side, especially if you're in the level now where a lot of people are, where they're retired and they're going to have to take required minimum distributions. Build up some cash in that IRA. You'll never be forced to sell. So you miss out on a little bit on the upside, but you never have to lock in a loss at a bad time.
Here's a question for Terry. Let's see, where do we start? I'm in a corporate 401k related to my employment, and it's doing gangbusters because it's very leveraged towards growth. What advice can Terry give me as someone trapped in a group of corporate funds? I can't buy T-bills from there.
Right, exactly. So you're younger, you're still working, and probably there are fewer choices that are conservative. But you might want to go through the choices of funds you have at this stage of the market, and there's probably an equity income fund or a balanced fund. It's not getting you out of the stock market. It's probably going to be a more conservative fund. Or you can just stick with your S&P 500 index fund, keep putting the money in, because if the market drops, as John and I both agreed, at some point it will. It's not going straight to the moon. Then your $500 a month contribution will buy more shares of that S&P 500 index fund. But it's a warning to you that in addition to contributing to your 401k, you should be building up some liquid savings outside the plan. So you could buy T-bills in your own name. You could have a money market account at the bank.
Right.
And what that does for you is a very psychological thing. If you're working still, you're probably years away from needing to start withdrawing for retirement income. But having cash on the side makes you go, yeah, well, okay, I'm not going to go broke. The market will come back eventually. Okay, I can stay calm through this. And that's the point about when you're retired, rolling over from your old 401k into an IRA where you have a wide choice and you could find a money market fund, a treasury-only money market fund as part of your IRA, which would give you, you know, protection on the downside.
Yeah. By the way, Terry, I need 30 seconds to remind folks at the Midwestern University Multispecialty Clinic in Downers Grove. They take the time to get to know you, located just off I-355 and Butterfield Road. Student and faculty providers offer caring, unrushed, thorough health care. Experience the Midwestern difference for family medicine, vision and dental care, physical and speech therapy, and much more. Visit MWUClinics.com or call 630-743-4500 to learn more. The Midwestern University Clinics, your family's home for health care. What about this one, Terry? I'm a teacher. I took a $10,000 pay cut last year.
Ooh.
I'm in credit card debt, $35,000. I pay more than the minimum and on time, but I need relief from the high APR. What's the best way to get out of this debt?
Oof. Okay, today, I think it was just today or yesterday, the news came out the average interest rate, average on credit cards has now jumped to 22.76%, 22.75%. That will bury you in debt. Let me give you A, B, and C. If your credit is still good, go on creditcards.com and look for a balance transfer card that will give you a zero interest rate for maybe 18 months. They still have those, but this is a trap for you, because if you don't pay off that balance in that zero interest rate period, the rate will jump up even higher than your current rate. But that will give you some breathing room. At the same time, put that old credit card away, the one that's currently so charged up after you transfer the balance. You may not want to close it if it's your longest held card, because longevity of credit history matters in your credit score. But put it away. Don't be tempted to charge it up again. So number one, give yourself some breathing room. Number two, here's a plan. If you will take the current minimum monthly payment and write it down. Maybe it's $112 a month or $325 a month, whatever it is. Write that amount down. This month's a minimum. Double it. So it was $325, now it's $650. If you can pay that same $650 every month on this credit card and never charge another penny on that card, you will pay off the balance in less than 3 years. Not double the new minimum, but write down that amount today. So that's one way to buy yourself out of credit card debt. It's like one of those magic tricks. It's the way they compound the balance and the way the interest keeps growing. So double the current minimum. Don't charge another penny. Pay it every single month, and you will have that balance paid off. And finally, if you're totally buried in debt, and you're saying, are you kidding? I'm on a fixed income. I'm on Social Security. I can't double it. The reason I have a balance on my credit card is because the refrigerator broke, and I couldn't live without one. And what am I going to do? I'm going to give you, as I always do, the toll-free number for the National Foundation for Credit Counseling. It connects you to the nearest local agency. Remind me, we'll say it again at the end of the show, John. It's 800-388-2227. The National Foundation for Credit Counseling. You can Google that, or nfcc.org, or 800-388-2227. Mm-hmm. That's free. You can trust them. They're not going to try and ruin your credit. They will either give you some guidance. They actually can deal with your creditors if you're in deep trouble and get them to agree to a lower monthly payment. You send money to them and they distribute it, and the creditors will lower the rates and re-age the accounts. And if your bankruptcy is your only option, they will actually tell you that as well.
You didn't mention a reverse mortgage if she owns property.
Oh, well, that's way out there. Want 15 other things? Rent a room to a college student.
Okay, but a lot of people are sitting on $50,000 and making multi-thousand-dollar monthly payments.
That's a whole other decision. This is someone who's still working.
Yeah.
So I presume she's not retired, and you have to be older to get a reverse mortgage.
It's 58 or something like that.
62.
Okay.
Anything you can just add this. You're probably going to a break.
Yeah, we got to go to a break.
But just let me say this. This is the moment. I've said this a couple times in my historic talking about the economy. Right now, you could still get a job, not for the rest of your life, but for the next 6 or 8 months. I don't care if it's babysitting or working at a restaurant or driving a neighbor and charging for it or something like, or renting out a room. Anything you can do now to bring in that money and use it to pay down the credit card debt, it's critical that you do it while the economy's good and people are looking for
help. Have money to spend.
Yeah.
Terry Savage is here, the syndicated financial columnist. You find at terrysavage.com. She's the author of Social Security Horror Stories. It's a book about how to protect yourself from the system and avoid clawbacks. What are you looking at now, Terry?
No, something else.
All right, let's pick up some phone lines then. 312-981-7200. Terry's here to help. And we'll start with you, Susan. You're on WGN. What can we do for you?
Yes, I have three annuities that I've had for 10 years, and I'm wondering if I could put that in my trust, my revocable trust fund, so I have better control over when and where and how much my beneficiaries get.
Okay, well, a lot depends on what annuities you have. These are tax-deferred annuities that are not held inside a retirement account. You just bought them to grow money tax-deferred, right?
I switched my pension and retirement fund to them when I retired 10 years ago.
Oh, I see. Okay. So you need to contact the annuity company and say that you mm-hmm. want to retitle those annuities in the name of your revocable living trust. Now, you can easily retitle assets, but I'm not sure quite honestly, about these annuities, but they will ask for those relevant couple of pages that your lawyer should give you, because you probably transferred your house into the name of your revocable living trust and your money market account, maybe not your everyday checking account. So they'll need some documentation. But if not, part of the question is whether those annuities have any value after you die. If you've named a person to receive the money after your death. That would have lowered your payout. So one of the things you want to do is make sure that there's some value left after death, because then there would be a beneficiary, and you would either name an individual or you could name your trust and have the trustee distribute the assets the way you say. So you need, first of all, to contact the annuity company, find out if they will retitle the trust, the annuity into the name of your revocable living trust, and then find out what happens to those at your death. Is that just one of those things where the payments stop, or does it continue over the life of someone else, and how do you make sure that's done correctly as well?
Because I have beneficiaries on there. I assume that any money in there, because there's a lot of money in there now, why would it be gone upon death?
Well, the point is you need to understand the terms of that annuity. If it was one that allowed you to name beneficiaries, you could either continue to name the beneficiaries, or you could, and anything account with a named beneficiary doesn't go through probate. So that kind of account wouldn't have to be retitled into the name of your trust. So I think what you need to do is contact the annuity company, because there's so many different ways that this could play out. I just can't give you that advice, but you should talk to them about A, retitling, and B, maybe at this point you don't want to name your two grandchildren as co-beneficiaries. Maybe you want to put that money into the living trust and have your successor trustee distribute it.
Thanks for the call and good luck. Terry, give us a short answer to this one, because I don't want to spend a long time on it. But 708 said, please ask Terry why people believe the economy is terrible, even though we have low unemployment and the stock market is hitting new highs. I want people who say the economy is terrible to tell us what that means. Tell me what it means, because I don't know the number.
Well, aside from political.
National surveys, people have been persuaded or convinced. Somehow they came to the conclusion the economy is bad.
Well, anybody who's falling behind, that doesn't mean they're unemployed, because there are relatively few people unemployed. But there are many people whose salaries or incomes, I should say, have not kept up with inflation, so they're feeling squeezed. Or they've had an emergency and were forced to charge something on their credit card, and now they're slowly being, you know, heaped a pile of debt. The law of holes, when you're in a deep hole, stop digging. Well, interest rate just piles more dirt on top of you in the bottom of that hole. So there are a lot of people who are not looking around and saying, whoa, my 401k, I'm rich, look at that, the market's at all-time highs. They're not saying, my minimum wage thing just went up and it's keeping up. They're not saying, gosh, I'm glad I'm in tech or wherever it is that they're see a bright future for themselves. So I'm sure there are people that absolutely could be involved in a situation where they don't feel the economy is great. What they're saying is, my economy's not great. But if I look at the statistics, the economy's growing, GDP is growing each quarter. Inflation has come down to, quote, only, well, we'll see tomorrow, but, you know, around 3%.
Well, I think what you're talking about, every economy is a very personal thing, is a fair point. And people who feel like the economy is bad mean the economy is bad for them.
And finally, people are telling you that. I think that's mean-spirited on the part. We used to have politicians who, I'm talking both sides, who inspired us to believe and talked about how things would be better, instead of dumping on you and reminding you that things are not as bright. Everybody wants a much brighter future. And instead of being reminded constantly of the negatives, what we really are missing in general is politicians who inspire us with the positive options. I mean, it's not Republican or Democrat. John F. Kennedy did it, and Ronald Reagan did it, you know, and to a certain extent, Bill Clinton did it, and even George Bush, you know, the 1,000 points of light. I haven't heard any inspirational and aspirational messages. I don't hear people saying, we're the greatest country in the world, and money from all over the world is rushing in to buy our treasury bills and lending us money because their countries are in such dire straits. And that's China, that's Western Europe, that's even South America. I mean, we have not, I know I'm going on some kind of rant, but the thing is, what we're missing is hope. And we're not getting it from any politicians. And it's horrible. I don't even want to listen to the news.
Dan, you're on WGN with Terry Savage. What can we do for you?
Yeah, Terry, I have a question about protecting my assets as it relates to car insurance. As you know or are aware, most car insurance policies, the liability for body injury, if you're at fault, is $100,000 per person, $300,000 per accident. God forbid if I get in a bad accident, that's my fault, and the other party sues me for like $1 million. If my insurance doesn't cover the portion that's my fault, they're going to come after my assets. So my question to you is, should I up my insurance policy for greater coverage, or how should I protect my assets?
That's an interesting question when you consider how expensive medical care can get.
Well, so here's what you want to do. Number one, you probably immediately want to increase your liability coverage, and that'll cost you something on your auto policy. But number two, you should be probably, I sound like a commercial here, bundling your homeowners and your auto, and then you should have an umbrella liability policy, which will come in on top of the underlying limits of your homeowners and auto policy. It's relatively inexpensive insurance. It's sold like $100,000 a pop. And it will, there are some restrictions on what it will cover, but it would probably cover, it will cover the situation you describe. So if you're, mine won't cover me if I libel somebody, for example. But if you're a target because you're perceived as having assets and you think someone's going to go after you, you should absolutely have an umbrella.
I wonder if some of us
policy.
Have that and don't even know it.
You pay separately for it.
Oh,
it's
then I'm
going to
ask my
policy.
Guy. I mean, because every now and then I make a bad driving decision.
Well,
boom.
If someone says, okay, and that's John, he works for WGN, so obviously he's rich, right? Okay.
But $100,000, if that's the limit, or $300,000, it could be a $500,000 bill.
Exactly. So that's why people who have assets, other assets. Good question. Assets to protect have an umbrella liability policy.
I just did the insurance review with my insurance agent. They gave me a courtesy call. Hey, John, we think we'll go over your insurance
because
policy.
Because your premium's going up.
I do not want to take this call. So I took the call. My insurance went up. It didn't go up drastically. I know for some of you, it's something X, but for me, it wasn't terrible. But I may just ask him if I can give him more money. My husband lost his job and has filed disability. He had to roll his 401k into an IRA. We know nothing about IRAs. Are they safe?
Whoa, that depends on where you rolled it to. Was it a brokerage firm that said, oh, great, we'll tell you what to do with that $289,000? Did you roll it into bank CDs, an IRA rollover account? Did you roll it over to Fidelity and say, I'd like a little bit of advice on some conservative investments? An IRA is just a tax-sheltered envelope for the investment choices you make. But let me make a couple of points. I'm surprised the company forced him to roll it over, but he did. And I don't know if he's gotten onto Social Security disability yet. The average time it takes is 2 years to get cleared to get those payments.
Really?
There's not an asset test for Social Security disability. So if he had $1 million IRA, that wouldn't impact him. But he has to be completely and permanently unable to work in order to qualify for disability. And if he does have some income, earned income, you have to report it monthly and you could go over the limits very, very quickly. So this would be a good time, I think, just for at least a meeting with a financial planner who's aware of Social Security disability rules and who could give you some unbiased, not selling you stuff advice. People think when I mention WealthRamp, where you can get matched with a fee-only fiduciary advisor, that must mean you have millions of dollars and you're retiring and you're deciding what island to live on. But that's not the case here. You should probably set up a meeting because if you don't even know what an IRA is, someone's going to take advantage of
What's
you.
What's the website they go to?
I get nothing out of this. You go to either directly to wealthramp.com or at terrysavage.com, top right-hand side. There's some little boxes. Find your trusted financial advisor. It's like match.com, but only for fee-only, carefully chosen fiduciary advisors.
Good to know. 312-981-7200. More questions and answers from Terry Savage. First, let's update you on more business news. Here's Steve Grzanich.
Start your timer. It's time for the Wintrust Business Minute, sharing Chicago's business news of the day. Kroger and Albertsons have released a list of stores the companies plan to sell if a merger between the grocery giants wins approval from regulators. The merger was announced in 2022, but the Federal Trade Commission sued to stop it earlier this year. Kroger is the parent company of Mariano's Fresh Markets, and Albertsons is the parent company of Jewel Osco. The list includes 35 stores in the Chicago area, mostly Mariano's locations, that will be sold to C&S Wholesale Grocers, which owns Piggly Wiggly. Workers at the impacted stores will become employees of C&S. The Kroger-Albertsons merger may not happen. Regulators may block the deal because of antitrust issues. Portillo's is adding another location in Michigan. The Oak Brook-based chain says it's opening a new restaurant in Livonia, just outside of Detroit. This will be Portillo's second location in Michigan after Sterling Heights. Portillo's had previously announced an expansion that could include more than 900 restaurants across the country over the next 20 years. Portillo's currently has 85-plus locations in 10 states. I'm Steve Grzanich, and that's your Wintrust Business Minute.
Now, the business of food with Steve Alexander.
Yeah, thank you, and it's harvest time for one of our favorite fruits, table grapes. No, I heard it from this guy.
George Matoyan, Mountain View Fruit Sales in Reedley, California.
George is also a farmer on a fourth-generation vineyard in Central California's San Joaquin Valley. And more from him after I thank the Chevy Silverado and ChevyDriveChicago.com for sponsoring us today. There's never been a better time to put a Silverado in your toolbox. And if you drove your Silverado to California right now, you could load it up with grapes fresh from the vine. Pickers have started picking.
Yeah. In fact, we started today just in a small way on some red flame seedless, and we'll start some green and black varieties by end of the week.
How's the harvest look, George?
Well, initially, the estimate is going to be 94.5 million, and that's boxes, and each box is 19 pounds net. So
yeah, I'll do the math on that one. Roughly 1.8 billion pounds of table grapes are going to be picked in California's vineyards, and all of them by hand.
The crews usually get out at sunup, which presently is like 5:30 in the morning, and they'll work till about 10:30 or 11 before it gets too warm. We like to cut it off.
By too warm? He means too hot.
We're close to maybe 12 days over 100. We just broke a record yesterday at 114.
George says there are no machines that can do the delicate work of not only picking grapes during the summer, but doing the pruning and other handwork that needs to be done year-round by men and women who are mostly immigrant workers.
We love them. They do a fantastic job. And, you know, it's almost like a partnership.
George Matoyan, a grape farmer who's part of the Mountain View Fruit Growers, a group of farmers who pool their marketing muscle together under the Mountain View Estates label.
And they are 100% all family farms.
And when you're shopping for grapes,
just really want to emphasize during the summer months, you know, to support the California growers.
On the food calendar, it's National Pina Colada Day. If you like pina colada. I'm Steve Alexander. That's the Business of Food on 720 WGN.
Hey, Terry Savage, what's your opinion about this? If you don't need to live off Social Security, which I don't, take Social Security at 62 and a half and invest it all. In the long run, you'll make more investing it than the 8% increases you get if you wait. Terry's making a face.
I don't quite know how to respond to that. That's like taking all your assets and betting them on red or black. The one retirement plan you're going to have that will be adjusted for inflation is your Social Security check. Don't start thinking about what if it isn't there. That will be the next big political nightmare after we get through this election. They'll fix it in some way. I mean, the average historic annual return with dividends reinvested, average of the S&P 500, is 10.1%, according to Ibbotson. That goes back almost 100 years through bear markets and bull markets. We've been above average in recent years. In order to make those averages, we might be below average in future years. Why? It's like a bird in the hand, two in the bush. If you want to bet your future on the fact that you can beat the market or even achieve that the market itself will achieve every year when you need the money to live on, the average returns, be my guest. Call me in 15 years. Tell me what was best.
That was I don't think it's a good idea. Let's pick up on line four, and that is Jim. You're on WGN. How can we help you, Jim?
Question on how to convert monies in a 457 into a regular IRA, and then distributions to my required minimum distribution, a mandatory distribution rather, and then some of that money into charitable organizations rather than taking the hit and taxing it.
I'm going to give you three easy answers. Go to terrysavage.com and under columns, put in these three words, three different searches. The first one is rollover now. That will lead you to an article that will tell you exactly how to do a rollover from your 401k to an IRA. The second question you had was RMDs. So after you get that column, go back to the homepage and search the columns for just put in RMD, required minimum distribution, and you will come up with a column that shows you how to calculate your required minimum distribution. And then go back and do a third search, put in RMD charitable contribution, and you will see an article I wrote just, it must have been before the end of the year, so it's about 6 months ago, on how to make your RMD go further by not paying taxes on it, but turning it into, within certain limits, a charitable contribution. So there are three articles up there at terrysavage.com. Search the box under columns, and you'll get explicit instructions on how to do that.
Time's up.
Oh, no. Really?
Yep, we're out of time.
Okay, sorry.
That's good. By the way, questions have come in about 401ks, Roth IRAs, long-term care, the market, and returns. We'll pick it up with your text messages. If we didn't answer it now, we'll try to get to them next week. It always helps if you call.
Yeah, and just search at terrysavage.com in that box over the columns. The odds are, if you've got a question about it, in the last 16, 18 months, I've written a column about it, and you'll get your answer there.
We'll talk to you next Wednesday.
See you then.